This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
It's heavy metal day. Kalu Kalay. Can you dig it? Hail Satan. Must be Satan responsible for this beautiful weather. It's getting near Halloween and it feels like summer. That is some seriously dark magic. I'll tell you what else, Dean Risper, dark magic is this slushy.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder, is this what Alzheimer's is going to feel like?
I would hope so.
All right. We are joined today with the Heavy Metal Kids. I cannot believe how lucky we are to have these face melters and shredders with us. Stars of radio and the printed page of dying art. We are really selling heavy metal today as the smart man's medium. Never been attempted anywhere before. Another first for Arts and Seizure. We're very progressive here. We came out against sexual harassment, poverty, air pollution, many things long before the
death to false metal.
Yeah, and death to false metal. And you know what, Catherine? Corporate rock still sucks. That's right. I'm here with Dean Rispler.
Hi.
All right. God of Thunder, bass player for the famous band formerly known as the Dictators, and current star of Gimme Radio, the heavy metal radio station.
Yes. Yes, it's going quite well.
All right, and once again, the beautiful Catherine Turman is here, who produces Nights with Alice Cooper, the second greatest radio show of all time. Also, co-author of Louder Than Hell, which is the heaviest book of all time.
DJ on Gimme Radio
and,
as well.
And soon to be an emerging star on Gimme Radio.
Yes, thanks to one Mike Edison, the connection was made.
A shittick. That's it. I love this. You know, if you make three shitticks, you get to go to heaven, or at least that's what my grandma used to tell me. And now we're also doing a special star tuner, making her radio debut here at Arts and Seizures. It's Julie Turley, the heavy metal librarian.
Yay!
I told you. This is head banging for smart people. This is how you can bang your head and not destroy your brain. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you. I'm just here to do some deep database searching that anyone might need.
Julie is a very legit librarian representing a very expensive East Coast university. and we're going to be joined a little bit by our friend Mike McPadden calling in from Chicago, but though he's a Brooklyn boy, author of best heavy metal books, just to name but one. Well, this is great. I can't believe we're here. Question. I feel like John McLaughlin on the old John McLaughlin report.
Not Intermounting Flame.
Is that metal?
No, but yeah, definitely has an influence on some of those metal.
I want to talk about musical bigotry.
Yeah,
I want to talk, you know, divisive politics of music. It seems very timely. Is metal still in the ghetto?
Some of it is. Yeah, I mean, there are unfortunately ignorant people all around the world. So you're going to find bands that are ignorant in metal and punk and hardcore who are definitely not. They don't have their shit together, and they, you know, there's national socialist black metal bands, and there's national socialist oi bands, and skinhead bands.
I'm really getting to it. Punk used to be the red-haired orphan of the musical world, and people would make fun of it for its incompetence and general lack of content, you know, intellectual content. But punk sort of grew up. Punk is now considered art and hip, and people are now claiming punk roots that they never even had.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean,
has that happened with metal? I don't know.
Well,
yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely an art to metal, and that there are bands that are considered artists and doing their own art. The thing is, with all extreme music, there's always going to be reactionaries, And like with punk, when punk came out, it was like it was a reactionary, like anti, you know, like fuck society, fuck politics, fuck everybody. We want to do what we want to do, anarchy, you know, all that kind of stuff. And of course, there was a reactionary movement against that, like a skinhead reactionary movement that was like, no, we're all about fascism.
That's what unites us.
Yeah. So, well, that's the same thing that happened in metal. I mean, there's bands that are like there's bands that are totally
metalheads.
Fascist.
I knew back in the day hated the Ramones because they said they couldn't play.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But you know, I will say the fact that Julia is here, the scholarly side of metal is really surprising me. I knew a kid in the last few years who was very into metal. He is also going to librarian school, and there does seem to be, it's being addressed in conferences. It's getting a gravitas, yeah. I guess.
There's more heavy metal scholarly literature every day. I'm trying to contribute to that. Currently working on a paper on the heavy metal memoir, which I think is in its golden age. There's just been a proliferation of heavy metal memoirs, rock and roll memoirs, which are fascinating. Most of them are rock and recovery memoirs that sort of follow the paradigm of addiction and recovery. Mm-hmm. They're redemption stories.
The behind the music formula.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Well, what's your favorite? I mean, the heavy.
Well, you know,
I like that you proclaimed it to be the golden age of the heavy metal memoir.
You know, I would agree. When I got the book deal for Louder Than Hell on HarperCollins, they'd just done the Dave Mustaine book. And we were talking about, since my co-writer and I, John Wiederhorn, were in the middle of it, they're like, you know, who else can we get? They're like, can you reach out to Jason Newsted for me, whoever? But I feel like they also felt that so many people had already done their books that it was almost reaching, you know, saturation point.
Rock bios, rock memoirs got very saturated very quickly, not just across metal, but I think after Keith Richards' book came out, there was a giant rush to sign people up. And mm-hmm. by the time, I mean, it was great for Steve Tyler, and it was great for Ozzy, but after that, it started getting to people who weren't the front man and weren't household
names. You mean someone in Godsmack? I don't even know if he's done it. Sorry, Sully.
You're the bass player in Coldplay. Yeah, the ball kind of rolled off the table. By the way, Ozzy's book, thumbs up. I thought Ozzy's book was incredibly funny. For a book that I had went in with like not the greatest expectations, not thinking that Ozzy was going to be a great man of letters, very, very funny book. Steven Tyler, by the way, not so much. He wrote it with a very high-priced gunslinging ghostwriter and really tried to make the whole thing sound like in-between song patter and failed spectacularly.
I haven't read either of those.
And you know what I just got? I was going to say, I just got the Bruce Dickinson one, and I have to say, I opened right to the photos, and there were, you know, Bruce has not changed much over the years. But the thing is, I kind of looked for baby photos and marriage and kids, and I didn't see it. And I was bummed out. Maybe that's a female thing. So I flipped to the back to see if there was an index, and there was a little afterword from Bruce, like, we're not talking about children, relationships, divorces of anyone. I'm like, oh, not going to read it.
My problem with memoirs generally is they start too early and end too late.
Yeah, we need the halcyon days of the sex and drugs.
It's like, you know, if I'm going to read the Guns N' Roses book, I kind of really just want to know about, like, you know, the period of, like, say, you know, 1985 to maybe 1989. Exactly. Do not care what you did before. Don't give a fuck what you did after.
Wait, which Guns N' Roses book? There isn't an official one, is there?
How many Guns N' Roses books actually are there at this point?
Well, you know, Slash has his own memoir. Duff has his own memoir.
Steven Adler.
Yeah.
Those are recovery books, right?
Yeah.
Duff and Steve.
Yes, Duff's and Slash's definitely are. And Steven Adler's.
And Steven, too, I think, yeah.
But it's kind of a notorious
He's not
drug
really.
Addict.
I think he's still struggling.
Yeah.
He was the only one of those three.
That's
on
what I want. I want the drug book without the recovery part.
Yeah.
Wait.
Why does heavy metal have to have a happy ending? Isn't that kind of and is this the
it
whole
didn't
for,
hey wait Lemmy's book White Line Fever, no happy ending. He died still drinking and presumably doing drugs, and a sad ending because he's gone, but a good life because he didn't he never compromised his. Yep.
Exactly.
I mean, he switched from Jack and Coke to OJ and vodka. I mean, that's a compromise I'm in.
It's tragic. Yeah, I mean, but Lemmy died. I mean, it's not a surprise. He switched to vodka for health reasons and never stopped staying wired the whole time. I mean, Lemmy's a hero. I think that's a good way to go.
I think so.
I think it's what he wants. I think it's how he wanted his story to end in that
I think it's quite perfect, actually. Speaking of booze, we took a poll to find out what was the most heavy metal wine, and the answer came back resoundingly, Jack Daniels.
Okay. As we call it now, the Lemmy.
That being said, though, what is the most heavy metal wine? I ask because you've been hanging out with Maynard at James of Tool, right?
Yeah, the interesting thing is he lives in Arizona, which is not a great wine growing region, but he's managed to make some really wonderful wines. I don't know
if he is the winemaker, and I think he names them all after relatives. I just got a bottle, I think, named after his grandmother. I can't.
So how was it?
It's really good.
Potable.
It very much so. I think he's actually serious about it. Where there's other people, I think Mustaine.
Mustaine's really serious about it. I met Mustaine a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I trained him for becoming a DJ on Gimme Radio.
Wait, so you trained Mustaine?
Yes.
I want to read your memoir, Training Mustaine.
I know.
Let's just say I was really happy when we left. I'm not going to go any deeper into that. But Mustaine was very serious. First, we got there, and he gave us Megadeth beer. He has his own Megadeth beer, that company Unibrow from up in Quebec.
Good. They're actually
good. You know, Quebec, they make the La Fin du Monde, Modite, and a couple other
Unibrow.
B-R-O-U-E.
Yeah. Well, either way, we had a Megadeth beer, which was pretty awesome. And then he would talked about his wines and how, like, they're all doing amazing. And he's like, oh, well, you know, if you're going to, the way I look at it is if you're going to do something, do it right. So I understood that, and supposedly his wines are getting great reviews. And
will that work for his radio show, the Do It Right concept? Is that?
I have a feeling we're going to have to hire more lawyers after his show.
Because it's all Lars James.
It's the shit he was talking about.
Ooh.
About other people.
That's
it was great.
That's what we wanted.
No,
hear.
It's great. I can't get into it, but it's great.
All right.
That's on Gimme Radio. So tell me about Gimme Radio.
Well, Gimme Radio is, if you go to gimmeradio.com, you could sign up for free. It's no ads, no subscriptions. It's 24 hours, 7 days a week of heavy metal.
Awesome.
We have Catherine has a show. I have a show. We have Randy Blythe from Lamb of God has a show. We have Will Carroll from Death Angel. Dave Mustaine has a show coming up soon. We got Ross the Boss from Manowar and Dictators and Ross the Boss Band. We have Johan Hegg from Amon Amarth.
It's a cavalcade of stars.
It's pretty awesome.
More stars than there are in the sky.
Yeah, got a lot of writers like Catherine, Boz from Decibel. Albert from Decibel is going to be chiming in.
I heard you saying before, though, you were talking to Catherine about her show, and you said, well, that stuff you're playing isn't metal. I heard you say that.
Yes. Yes, there is some non-metal stuff getting played once in a while.
Well, which begs the question, Rage Against the Machine, metal or not, Julie?
Metal. I mean, you know, why should we? Why can't metal be a big tent?
It could be. I mean, it falls under the metal tent, but it's just like, I don't know. I just want everything to be. I don't want everything to be the same on that.
Fascist.
I don't know. I don't want it to be like that way. And I want there to be different stuff. It just. I just don't like Rage Against the Machine, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we all have our preferences.
Yeah, I just don't like it.
Well, what do you think, like, when metal bands, like, go kind of pop? I
like
mean,
what?
The weird thing, like, listen, speaking of, like, you know, bigotry and decisiveness, definitely when we grew up, you were a metalhead, you were a punk. You know, I felt like I always got caught sort of between a rock and a hard place. I never liked certain heavy metal growing up. We've talked about this, a lot. Judas Priest and the new wave of British heavy metal. I never liked that, but I love Deep Purple and we all get along on Motorhead and Black Sabbath, my all-time favorite, and certainly Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, if you consider that metal.
Yes.
But yeah, that's where I am.
Yes. Well, the reason I like Catherine's show is because she plays a lot of like LA glam stuff that I want to hear on there. I want to hear Pretty Boy Floyd. I want to hear Black and Blue. I want to hear Bang Tango. I want to hear that stuff on the radio because it's
Johnny
another
Crash, it's Little Caesar.
Yeah, it's
Junkyard.
Little Caesar.
The librarian was going nuts for Bang Tango.
Sea Hags, right?
Sea Hags, yes.
Salty Dog.
Yes.
And like bands like that, like some of those songs are great. And I like, you know, I was not a hair metal fan growing up, but some of those songs are great, and it's great to hear them back in the, you know, in retrospect.
Some of it just sounds like pop music, though. I mean,
Of course.
I hate to I don't want to sound sexist, but those were the bands that girls were really drawn to.
Yeah, of course. Poison,
the hair,
Cinderella,
yes,
Britney Fox.
Because girls like bands that look like girls.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. They were sharing hair products on the road.
Yeah, and in fact, that Salty Dog song, I think, Come Along, I think the line is, "Sweet little baby, she's my hot dog bun." So that's not sexist, right? What's the matter with being sexy?
Yeah. Being sexy. Nothing wrong with being sexy.
The fine line.
What is it about heavy metal, though, that the tropes of heavy metal are definitely, there's like the violent sexuality and a lot of leather.
Well, it depends what you're listening to.
Dean's wearing leather now.
Am I?
We're all wearing leather. Somewhere. For those of you in Radio Land, this is the hottest group of people we've ever had. But but none more than the heavy metal librarian, of course. We're going to take a break. But before we do, Dean, I want to give a moment up to your friend in Celtic Frost.
Yeah, I found out this morning that Martin Ain from Celtic Frost and Hellhammer, he died yesterday at the age of 50, had a heart attack. Fucking great guy, like awesome guy, like totally cool. I met him with my friend Eric Keller out in Lucerne, Switzerland. They came to see the Dictators play. Martin was a huge Dictators fan, and he gave me tons of Celtic Frost shirts and some other stuff. And I sent him toys. He was a big toy collector. I sent him all these like rare toys and stuff.
Like marital aids and rubber goods?
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. More like, you know, like Japanese toys and weird toys, collectibles and stuff. So, but he was a great guy, 50 years old, too young to go, but he left a great legacy. Hellhammer and Celtic Frost will always be
all right. Well, let's listen to some Celtic Frost, and you listen to Arts and Seizures. It's Heavy Metal Day. Can you dig it? This is Mike Edison with the greatest group of all time. Let's spin Celtic Frost. We're coming back with author and star Mike McPadden. We'll be back in 1 second here on Arts and Seizures. Yeah. You dig it back here on Arts and Seizures. That's right. That's Dean Ristler, the God of Thunder. We're here with Catherine Turman and, of course, the heavy metal librarian, Julie Turi. And you know what?
Of course.
Dean, that Celtic Frost, that sounds like a lot of the hardcore bands, the thrash bands, punk rock bands, the CBGBs bands that I was listening to. And that line between punk rock and heavy metal is a fine one. But back in the day, I remember when bands started going over to the dark side, they would be accused of selling out because they were starting to sound too metal, getting away from the 77 formula. Yeah.
Totally.
But,
totally. I like all that stuff because I'm a huge metalhead. I grew up a metalhead. So, when I was 13, I bought a Dead Kennedys record because I kept reading all these interviews with metal bands and how they were trying to get faster and faster and faster. And that's what I was into. I was into Motorhead, Venom, Metallica, anything that was faster and faster. And all these guys were like, oh, yeah, we listened to the Misfits and Discharge and Dead Kennedys and, you know, Slayer. Slayer was like, oh, yeah, we listened to Dead Kennedys. I was 13 years old. I was like, I got to start buying hardcore records and punk rock. And then I was like, you know, my life was already ruined by then, but that just sent me down the rabbit hole.
But Metallica sort of put the Misfits over with the metal crowd, right?
They did. They did, but I was already into Misfits before that.
I'm from New Jersey, man. It was Misfits country.
I'm sorry.
Well, speaking of Misfits,
you're from Long Island, which is an oddly weird place.
I am originally from where our next guest, Mike McPadden, is
Brooklyn,
from.
New York?
From Sheepshead Bay.
County of Kings?
Brooklyn. Home of Roland Roaster.
I was going to say, speaking of Halloween and Misfits, next week, don't you have a Halloween show, which we could all be part of too, but we're not.
I love you, Kat, for pitching. Everybody here is welcome because it's a big tent here. But yes, that's next week. We've got Emmy Award winning makeup artist Lucy O'Reilly is going to give you Halloween tips.
I hear she's cool.
And also, one of our favorites, the Rosie Schapp, former cocktail columnist for the New York Times and a very witchy woman, is going to join us for the ultimate Halloween show. Also, Pete Sorembo will be back next week. But first, right now,
Right now.
Right here.
Right now.
And write everything.
Right now.
We've got all the way from Chicago, Illinois, calling back to the County of Kings. It's our friend Mike McPadden, author of If You Like Metallica, Heavy Metal Movies, and many, many more. That was my Joe Franklin voice, Mike. Many, many more. How you doing, buddy?
Much appreciated. And I'm very much starving over the reference to Roland Roaster. Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry, Mike.
I'm from Flatbush. Over by Brooklyn College.
Oh, I thought you grew up in Sheepshead Bay.
I mean, I spent enough time there. as you said, that was Roland Roaster country.
So which is more metal, Brooklyn or Queens?
Brooklyn, definitely.
Yeah, it's Brooklyn because of Sir Lord Baltimore and L'Amour.
L'Amour.
Yes. So, L'Amour.
Yeah.
Right?
Zigzag Records.
Yeah, Zigzag Records on Avenue, was it T or U?
U.
Anyway.
Well, we are Avenue U, yeah. We are the County of Kings.
Yes.
So, Mike, we've got Julie here, the Heavy Metal Librarian. I thought this was a good opportunity for you, great author. I'm joining another great author here, Kat. What's your favorite heavy metal book, and you being the author of many of them? Don't name one of your own, or do.
Who's
Mike McPadden, what's your favorite heavy metal book?
Did we lose him?
Did we lose
me?
Mike? Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
Mike.
Yeah. We know it's early, but come on.
My favorite heavy metal book is my own.
Yes, of course.
Of course, and then followed by Catherine's book. And I mean that most sincerely.
Well, her book is heavier than yours is. And if you disagree, you just don't know the math. I think it's like 3 fucking pounds.
Actually, like 2.2, yeah. But...
I wonder if you put our books together, if it would add up to 6.66 pounds.
Oh, or if they would have a baby and
that's
then
an
we wouldn't
experiment
have to
we should do on the air.
I think you should write another book and get it up to 714, yo.
Oh.
or a 420
book.
Well,
Mike, you did write the book on heavy metal movies. What is the best heavy metal movie?
The best heavy metal movie is This Is Spinal Tap, which is also my favorite comedy of all time.
It is the good. And oddly, heavy metal not known for being funny. Generally speaking.
No, just the opposite, yeah, yeah. Not a lot of room, especially early on. I mean, now, you know, as you guys were talking about, like, all the walls have come down. There really is nothing that separates punk, hardcore, metal, and thrash, and...
Lady Gaga.
And, you know, it's all just hard rock, and as it should have always been, but I guess they had to develop on their own. And I came to it through punk, and as I wrote about in If You Like Metallica, another fine book, I was hanging out by Washington Square Park when I was 17, listening to some punk rock cassettes on a Walkman, and a most alluring punk girl walked by in a Metallica T-shirt, and I walked up to Tower Records and bought Ride the Light.
There you go.
That's by the way, that's how decisions used to be made.
Yes.
Pre-internet.
Yeah.
Pretty girl, T-shirt equals record sales.
Yes.
Wait, but I have to ask, what about people who you see now wearing an Iron Maiden or Judas Priest shirt, and you don't think they like the band, and it's a fashion thing? How do we feel?
Oh, my God. They got
it's ubiquitous,
it.
Ubiquitous, yeah.
They got it at Old Navy.
Yeah.
Okay, and I got to think about people who buy clothing that's already distressed, you know, like somebody buys, like, a guitar that's already distressed.
Yeah.
You got to earn that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like buying jeans that are already ripped. It makes no fucking sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
No, you see a lot of like Pink Floyd shirts and Rolling Stone shirts, you know, like, dude.
But the sheer amount of Misfits and Ramones shirts that you see, where the owner of the shirt, the wearer of the shirt, has no idea what they're wearing.
Ramones, Jesus Christ, and the Misfits, both ubiquitous.
Yeah,
it's something really offensive to me about the spanking clean Ramones T-shirt.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I bought my first Ramones T-shirt. I think I was like 45 years old. I had never had one. And I was at the leukemia benefit for Johnny Ramone, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, the money's. I never owned a Ramones shirt, but I washed it and I wore it about 5,000 times before it came out of the house. I decided. I mean, by that time I was 48. By that time I was 48 before it was ready. And you know, we played with the Ramones numerous times back in the day, but for some reason I never owned a Ramones shirt.
Yeah.
The first time I saw you, Mr. Edison, was it Vassar?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you were at that
Sharky's
gig?
Machine opens for the Ramones. You talk about that as a legendarily terrible show. I thought it was great, to the point that I remembered you and was thrilled when Peter Landau introduced us like 6 months later.
We were harshly booed off the stage. That's a tough gig opening for the Ramones, especially at a college, because the kids there, they're not real punks. They don't really want, they're not there for anything but to see the Ramones and to say they saw the Ramones. The colleges were a very weird place. Opening up the Ramones, it was a lot of fuck you. But the first fucking note, there were like shoes flying at us. I mean, fucking shoes.
Hey. But nice shoes, like like
Vassar shoes.
Vassar shoes.
Like Topsiders, nice shoes,
Sperry's,
loafers,
Sperry's, J. Crew, nice shoes.
With the pennies in them, that you get hit with a penny would pop out of the loafer.
Yeah. The ultimate frisbee team was like there, ready to kick our asses.
Yeah, exactly.
That was fast. Well, I appreciate my this one's fat that way. How long did we last before we actually went down on just like a hail of debris? It was a tough night.
It was the better part of 15 minutes. I'm going to say you made it past 10.
Well, I've had entire relationships that didn't last that long that I consider very successful. What's the scariest heavy metal band? Halloween's coming up, and we're talking about the Misfits, who hardly qualify as heavy metal, although they've kind of dallied a little bit with in like post-Danzig versions of it. And Danzig himself was sort of, is Danzig heavy metal? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I will say I was at the...
Is Johnny Cash heavy metal?
No.
But Danzig writes for Johnny Cash. Or sort of.
Well, that's all right, though.
See That My Grave Kept Clean? That doesn't sound like metal to you?
No.
I'm really trying to stretch it.
I was going to bring up Marilyn Manson because I was at the show in New York where he was injured on stage. And it's funny, a lot of people are like, he's a pussy, he didn't get hurt, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if you guys saw this.
No, he went out on a stretcher.
Yes, right? He did. Yeah, and that was scary. But so was he. He's definitely Halloween-y. I think he has something. He does a This Is Halloween, which might be in a Tim Burton movie. It might be Nightmare Before. I don't know. But I was looking for songs to play for Alice Cooper's Halloween show. And I'm playing some Cramps. It's exciting because it's a commercial FM radio station I could awesome. Get.
And who would have seen the day when the Cramps were going to be played? Did someone tell me they heard the Cramps on like a beer commercial or a commercial for a cruise or a couch or
I'll go on that cruise.
Someone told me recently they heard a Cramps song on a commercial, and I recently heard I Want to Destroy You by the Soft Boys on a Subway sandwich ad.
It's a Subway commercial.
Subway commercial.
Our jaws hit the floor here in Chicago. Yeah.
It was insane. It's insane.
I think a lot of people that were fans when we were fans, people our age, are now people who have some, we're now like working for like ad companies and are creatives and have some sort of degree of power to say, that Iggy Pop guy, maybe y'all should give him another look.
I think, I might be mistaken, but I think Howie Pyro from The Blessed and Degeneration, I think he had something to do with when some company used the Speedies, I Want to Take Your Photo, for a commercial. And I think he had something to do with that.
Speaking of our friend Harry Pyro, I should also plug our show next week at the Bowery Electric. It's the Cramps Tribute Night, part of the Sally Can't Dance series. I will be returning to reprise my role as the Crusher.
It's very exciting.
That's right. So don't show up unless you want to get eye gouged. All right. That's October 26th. And Howie is going to be a DJ, and it will be... a cavalcade of stars once again. Before we go, I wanted to ask the heavy metal librarian. You're from Utah, but, not exactly the fertile heavy metal stomping ground of Long Island and Brooklyn and New Jersey. how did you find all of this Satan's music?
Salt Lake City was a major stopping point for nationally and internationally touring bands. I saw many, many bands go through Salt Lake City. The Salt Palace was an excellent venue to see.
And how did the Mormon elders feel about these satanic bands? When Warren came riding through fucking their beast?
Well, I was raised Mormon, and heavy metal and rock, that was my only vice. It was my only allowable vice. I had to be super into music because I was kept from everything else, you know?
Yeah. Well, are there Mormon heavy metal bands?
There are heavy metal bands whose members are Mormon.
Okay.
But they're not thematically
Mormon.
So not
Mormon. Like a Christian rock, like
No, absolutely
Striper,
not. I'm doing a book right now, an oral history on the Salt Lake City punk scene in the 80s, and there was a very vibrant scene then. Two of the members of the most famous band that came out of that scene, the Massacre Guys, are now in the Descendants. So they were recruited from Salt Lake City to be in this Los Angeles band.
And there was the movie SLC Punk, which I saw recently.
Yeah, everybody in Salt Lake City who lived through the scene hates that movie because it makes us look really stupid. We were very smart.
Once again, it's been the fastest half hour on the radio today. Can you dig it? I want to thank all of our guests. Mike McPadden calling in from Chicago. Get his book, Heavy Metal Movies, I Like Metallica, and many, many more. It's Mike McBeardo McPadden. Find him. Dean Risper, star of stage and now radio. GimmeRadio.com.
Yes.
24-hour-a-day metal.
Yeah.
Okay? Face shredding for free.com.
Yes.
Give Me Radio. And of course, Catherine Turman is already the star of radio with the unruly Alice Cooper. I think that kid's got something. I think someday he's going to make it.
We'll see.
Speaking of scary, he practically invented it.
He did, and carries on. He gets his head chopped off every night.
And speaking of Alice Cooper, next week we're going to have Lucy O'Reilly on giving makeup tips. The Emmy Award-winning makeup artist, Lucy O'Reilly, giving you makeup tips. I was laughing before when we were laughing about the New York Dolls. Like, I always love the line, I think it was Lisa Robinson said, they passed the mascara around like other bands passed around joints.
Yes.
And that's maybe where it all started. Thanks again to Julie Turley, the heavy metal librarian. Please come back.
I would love to come back.
Okay. This is the smartest half hour on the radio today. Can you dig it? We'll be back next week with Rosie Chapp, Lucy O'Reilly for Halloween. It's Mike Dennis, Hearts and Seizures. Can you dig it? See you. We're going out. Wait. Dean, we're going to play your band before we go. What are we going to hear?
A song by Cosmo Demonic.
All right.
I don't know what song.
Cosmo Demonic. That's starring Dean Rispler. Here we go. See you guys.
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.